morning and welcome to Under the Olive Tree. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and the hour is 11. We will be with you till noon as usual. Under the Olive Tree is the Palestinian Canadian Community Radio Show. We have two reasons for our existence. The first is to provide Palestinian youth with access to the space, the equipment, and the know-how of radio production in order for them to reach our second goal, to produce radio content that truly represents the Palestinian community. If you'd like to join us or if you have any questions, please contact us at our email. UOT@CKUT.ca. Again, those are the initials of Under the Olive Tree. UOT@CKUT.ca. Or give us a call at our landline. Area code 514-398-6788. Again, that's area code 514-398-6788. On our show this week, we are focusing on culture and resistance in Palestine. In the aftermath of the Nakba, the catastrophe of 1948, a Palestinian resistance poetry began to emerge centered around what Ghassan Kanafani called Thaqafat al-Muqawama, or resistance culture, with reference to the literature created by poets inside the homeland within occupied Palestine, such as Mahmoud Darwish, Tawfiq Zayad, and Samih al-Qasim. Their poetry expressed a resounding defiance and a call to struggle, reasserting the indefeatable Palestinian spirit. This poetry also became the vehicle for the expression of the pain of dispossession and the longing for the homeland, bringing into language and back into history the Palestinian voice. The bold, provocative, and relentless spirit of this poetry is conveyed in the following excerpt of the poem entitled Baqoon, We Shall Remain by Tawfiq Zayadi. Here we shall remain as if we are 20 impossibles in Lidda, in Ramla, in the Jalil. We shall remain like a wall upon your chest and in your throat, like a shard of glass, a cactus thrown, and in your eyes, a sandstorm. Here we shall remain, guard the shade of the fig and olive trees, ferment rebellion in our children, as yeast in the dough, the cold of ice in our nerves, and in their heart, the red hell. If we get thirsty, we squeeze the desert, and we eat the sand if we get hungry, and we shall never leave. Here we have a past, a present, and a future. Our roots are entrenched deep in the earth like 20 impossibles in the Lid, Ramla, and Jalil. Here we shall remain. Our first part of the show is an interview with Dr. Najat Rahman, Assistant Professor of Comparative Literature at the University of Montreal, to speak on the historic part of the culture and resistance aspect of our show, speaking about the first generations that took up poetry and arts in the name of resistance. And in the second half of our show, we will explore the contemporary forms of resistance culture in Palestine, a new critique of the continuing colonial control over Palestine expressed through the medium of hip-hop, with an interview with Dam, the leading Palestinian hip-hop band. First, we will move to listen to one song that last week, while we were airing, we missed broadcasting this song. It is performed by Reem Kelani, the Palestinian singer in diaspora in England. She is singing in the World Cafe in London, and it is a jazz tune that definitely has sounds of resistance in Arabic. And she starts it with a mawal to Yafa and the lost lands of Yafa. I personally love this track. I hope you all do too. Yafa لقد شق دمعي فانتحبت دما متى أراكي وهل في العمر نمضي كيف الشقيقات
جنات Harry, life would be the bunk. I'd become a monk. I've got the blues, that you don't know the half of it, that you don't know the half of it, dearie, dearie blues.
That was Reem Khelani singing for Yaffa, a track that is remarkable in its ability to mix between traditional Palestinian hymns and modern jazz. We will move to our first interview of the day in our special for Culture and Resistance, And the first interview is with Dr. Najat Rahman, Assistant Professor of Comparative Literature at the University of Montreal. Her research includes Arab literature, and she did a major study on Mahmoud Darwish, the most famous Palestinian poet. The interview was conducted by Linda Tabar, our collective member in Montreal. We listened to the interview.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Najat Rahman.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
I'd like to start off by asking you to help us frame and contextualize this notion of resistance culture and within the Palestinian national struggle. In 1964, Mahmoud Darwish published his famous poem, Identity Card, Sajil Ana Arabi, record, I am an Arab. Similarly, Tawfiq Zayad, the former mayor of Nazareth, was writing equally powerful and defiant poetry such as Here We Shall Remain. Can you contextualize the rise of this type of resistance poetry by Darwish and Zayad? Discuss for us the power of the sentiment, the defiance also that it expresses.
In the Palestinian context, it was Ghassan Kanafani. He's a Palestinian writer, critic, and also was very much was a political activist. He was the one who first called this body of writing, specifically from 1948 to 68, Palestine as resistance literature. And he conducted a study on this writing and basically introduced all these writers to the Arab world and put them on the map. For they were really quite unknown before that. So for Kanafani, he held his writers as a model to argue that literature is indispensable to any political struggle for liberation, but also that it's no less important than armed struggle. So for him, resistance was a way of increasing political consciousness of people, and he saw this in the work of these poets. In his study, he examined this relationship between the literary production and the historical conditions of the occupation that inform it. So for him, he introduced this notion that culture and literature specifically is a site of confrontation that's really linked to a collective struggle of a people that want to take control of their lives and reclaim their own past, a past that is very much contested. For Kanafani, the struggle is not only, you could say, not only political against Israeli occupation or even repressive Arab regime, but also against social repression and economic exploitation. This term inadvertently created an identity, if you will, for these writers that stayed with them for a long time. And, of course, someone like Darwish resisted that a little bit because he felt a bit confined in terms of how the Arab critics later will read his poetry. That is that, in a sense, his poetry and writing was so excessively appreciated, if you will, for its engagement and political message that other considerations that other aspects of his poetry weren't really taken into account. So In this body of poetry before, in that period, 48 to 68, but later, you could say, up until the Beirut period in 1982, it expresses really a nationalist sentiment. That is, it affirms a national identity. It speaks of the struggle of Palestinians in terms of the occupation, their experience of dispossession, life, for example, in the refugee camps, the experience of imprisonment. But it has a tone that's very much defiant, and it calls for struggle, calls for resistance. And it also proclaims and insists on this historical link to the land. So I think of somebody in that earlier period of Abdurrahim Mahmoud, who was not only in his poetry foreseeing the eventual loss of Palestine and calling for preventing it, calling for struggle in his poetry, but he himself was also a fighter and died actually in 1948 fighting. Kanafani, who's of a later generation as a writer, will also be killed when his car was booby-trapped in Beirut in the early 70s. So those writers were, you could say, both engaged struggle, but also in their writing as well. So they... And in conditions, of course, of repression in terms of political expression, but also cultural expression as well. So what they had to later face, I think, the writers that came after them, is this is the predicament of the effacement of Palestinian history. So their poetry and writing becomes a way to resist that by the very act of actually writing. And there are various stages, but in that early period, it was very much called resistance to the changes that were taking place.
I'd like to just touch upon that maybe and elaborate. As you mentioned, Ghassan Kanafani himself, the writer and revolutionary, noted that the resistance literature is just as powerful as armed struggle. And also the African-American feminist poet Audre Lorde herself mm-hmm. noted that poetry itself is not a luxury, but is a necessary part of survival.
Exactly.
And you explained to us it's how vital it is, in a sense, within the Palestinian national movement in the context, as you said, the effacement of history, the denial of the people, their existence, their identity, their belonging. But can you go into the challenge and maybe the role of that, of this type of resistance literature after the initial act of reclaiming a space within which to speak, after this literature creates a space in which to begin to reassert a Palestinian identity?
The challenge for the writers themselves.
Yes, and the continuing role or the evolution of the role of this type of resistance literature.
Well, obviously they faced many consequences. For example, imprisonment. Oftentimes writers were imprisoned or there was censorship, of course. But also that sometimes they were targeted, like Kanafani, for example, who was killed. So the repercussions were severe, in fact. And it's probably important to keep in mind how recent that there has been, that not until the 90s, for example, the official Israeli position has been to deny the very existence of Palestinians, right? So it's the cultural expressions against that is to actually assert a presence and a history there has been very threatening. And so the challenges were not just for writers that were in Palestine, I would say, but also for writers who were outside. For example, writers like Jabra or again Kanafani, who lived in Beirut. So you could see it definitely for the writers, but also you could see it for artists as well, like the artist Naji Ali, who was also killed in London. So the challenges were different. I mean, they're not completely the same for those who were living in Palestine and those who were living outside. But the consequences, I would say, have been very difficult for both situations, for those in exile and inside.
In addition to reasserting a sense of identity or the beginning of moving out from the position of being silenced or moving from silence into a process of reclaiming language, mm-hmm. this type of poetry, obviously, as you mentioned, plays a powerful role, and one of its most vital functions is to inflect and to elevate, create an awareness in terms of political consciousness and a nationalist sense of belonging and sort of galvanizing the entry into the nationalist movement and struggle. What roles has it played in terms of reclaiming a sense of history, in terms of refamiliarizing or documenting or witnessing our own history and creating a literature that also witnesses and documents what's happened within the 20th century, the dispossession, the experience of exile, and all of the experiences that follow from this?
I would say, first of all, that the Palestinian story, if you will, is one that's still emerging. That is, that it's a very fragile narrative, and it's one that's still being contested, right? So the move to silence hasn't been one to silence to a complete voice. So in some ways, been a collective effort on all the parts of the writers to have a voice, but one could also say that that voice is not really still yet to be heard. And there's definitely other roles than one of serving as a historical record or as one of testimony. But I would say that particularly in the case of literature, that one can't really discount this role. There are other roles, of course, but in this particular role, it's important because, again, you don't have a historical narrative that's out there. So that in terms of commemorating, for example, 48 or having a record of that event or coming to terms with what exactly happened, the most proliferation of literature around that is actually literary narrative. So that has been a great contribution in this sense. I would also say that in terms of other roles, perhaps, that this literature has played. I think of somebody like Emil Habibi, for instance, who his writing oftentimes registers, but also resists this kind of fear in Palestinians and in terms of what they've experienced or the sense of despair. So it's a literature that tries to, from early on up until now in some sense, tries to raise consciousness, but it also tries to empower people, right, through registering their experience. I would also say that Palestinian literature has also helped to forge or maintain an identity in exile and across experience of dispersion and displacement. So in some sense, that has also helped to rethink identity. So it's a way to sort of experiment with forging a sense of collective identity without the exclusive aspects of national identity. So it's a form that's really kind of, that's still emerging in some sense. And even at the basic level of having cultural expression that is beautiful in terms of poetry and in terms of art, resists kind of the abject reality that characterizes the condition of Palestinians. In all those forms, I think it serves as forms of resistance, even though one can't really speak about the resistance as the same from 1948 until now. I think, for example, of someone like Darwish who sees even the act of writing a love poem as a form of resistance to the precarious, you could say, precarious existence.
No, definitely.
Of political conditions.
To continue to insist on beauty or to reassert freedom in the midst of the complete antithesis of that, and as you said, also to empower and to continue to reinvest in hope,
right,
and in the future, I guess. I'd just like to ask you to comment for us now on the significance of Mahmoud Darwish as a Palestinian national poet and as a brilliant poet in his own right, someone who you have closely studied and have examined in depth. His work captures the Palestinian collective consciousness and memory and also the tragedy of the uprootment. But his poetry also seems to transcend national boundaries. So can you comment for us on the significance of Darwish's poetry and the capacity of his verse to raise the Palestinian experience to a more general, universal level of human experience and suffering, I guess I might add?
Sure. With Mahmoud Darwish, he's an interesting writer of all the Palestinian writers in the sense that his writing has transformed so much since 1948. So I would say that it's not just a reflection, but it's partly that of the changes, the political changes that have taken place in the Palestinian scene. So he's one that has really captured kind of the vicissitude of Palestinian existence, the transformation in Palestinian consciousness, but also the beauty and the openness of its cultural expression. Because Darwish, in his poetry, oftentimes claims a very plural cultural heritage, and you see that in terms of influences. And so if one was to probably characterize the shifts perhaps a bit simplistically here, he was, you could say in his earlier writing, he was definitely a nationalist poet. That is, that he's very much interested in affirming a national identity. And that takes priority in his poetry. But that his writing or his poetry shifts after the Beirut period. That is, that with the siege of Beirut, the invasion of Israel, and the displacement of Palestinians one more time when the PLO has to leave Beirut. So this awareness of yet another displacement, except this time it's from exile, that there's another exile. It reconfigures the way Darwish thinks of not only the relationship to this homeland, but also the relationship to poetry itself and the role of poetry. So Darwish certainly continues to think about the relationship of poetry to the political, but he resists this kind of confining role of a nationalist poet or a poet, or of a national poet specifically. Again, he would like to sort of have others acknowledge the kind of shifts in his poetry, the experimentations on an aesthetic level that take place, but also for others to, critics here I speak of, that is to read beyond the political message, to see that his political engagement has to do more with how he thinks about the role of poetry in relation to the political itself. So in that sense, Mahmoud Darwish shows a lot of, perhaps more than other writers, the landscape of change that takes place in Palestinian cultural expression. So you see, for example, after Beirut, that he writes about, as I mentioned, this love poem. He writes another work that faces this question of facing death, the experience of near death that he had with his illness. he writes about also siege, political siege in terms of the Intifada, but also the siege of poetry, the siege of writing. There is a particular stage that's very important in his writing, which has to do with his interest in forms, in the lyric epic, for instance, where we could see probably how his engagement or his conception of resistance is evident there, but in a different form altogether. So he sees, for instance, lyric, which is traditionally in the tradition of Horace and Sappho, genre of loss, sees the possibility of also poetry having a space of loss and power, of the possibility of expressing or establishing belonging through lyric and through epic, because epic also has traditionally been a genre of the homeland. So it allows him to speak to a collective predicament through the form itself, but it allows him to also try to write the beginning, the origins again of a people, right? Or their beginnings, their history, in relation to another narrative that has been written and that has much power. So it's, again, contestation here in the sense of, in terms of its form. So even though for him poetry is very fragile as a force, but it also allows those who've been historically silent to have a space for telling their own story and their own narrative. And also in a sense of how these forms or these stories become enacted in the present. So that he's very much, in his poetry, there's very much an awareness of how these poetic stories or these even myths become enacted into historical reality. So his engagement with poetry has a real consciousness of that as he writes his own. In this sense, Darwish has always challenged his readers and pushed the Palestinians in some sense in terms of rethinking identity in a larger sense by taking account of the plurality of the cultural heritage of Palestinians.
One last question. Audre Lorde observed once very accurately and powerfully that the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. In some of Ghassan Kanafani and Najin Ali's work, you can see an oppositional perspective, which is very powerful and an interrogating structure of power, and at the same time leaving a space for some critique within. And so I want to ask you to comment on the potential or the role of a resistance literature and creating a space for oppositional identities, values, and alternative ways of being, which are themselves oppositional and alternative to the hegemonic system of power which they're opposing.
And I think you're right to point to this kind of danger that happens in terms of opposition, that is, that you're always in danger of recuperating that which you're opposing. And that has been, I think that in the specific case of Palestinian writers, they were well aware in terms of how nationalism has this, or a national struggle has a possibility of repeating this exclusionary move of that which it's fighting against, which is, of course, another nationalist narrative, right? So in this case, there is this real possibility of creating something that ultimately you were trying to resist to begin with. In this sense, literature has been kind of paradoxical, because you could say that it has always been quote-unquote safer space to call into question all sorts of things, identities, and experiments with identity, to question hegemonic forms of power. So it's been seen as safer because obviously it's seen as fiction and it's linked to the imagination, and the use of language is not exactly transparent language. So you have that possibility of posing subversive questions, of experimenting, and it allows you to do that. It's also, literature is kind of marginal, in a sense, marginal. That is, that it can be incorporated into a dominant culture, but oftentimes it stays on the margins of power, so that it also has that possibility to allow for space that opens up to opposing dominant powers. And we see that, I think, in many different contexts. The thing, though, about literature is that it could be read in so many different ways, of course, as we all know. But there are certain interpretations that become dominant, that become enacted. And in a way, that there is a need to kind of keep the process of interpretation, but the process of reading open in terms of literature to allow for this possibility of contestation. So I guess that what I'm trying to say here is that there's always this possibility for contestation, but there's also the possibility of undermining that as well. So it allows for many approaches to it. Well, there are many Palestinian women writers, and you have Fadwa Tuqan, Sahar Khalifa, Diana Badr. You also have, I would say that the men writers have been very much concerned with that the oppression that they called into question was also patriarchal, social, familial. It wasn't simply political.
I'd just like to thank you for joining us, Dr. Rahman. It's really been a pleasure having you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mean it happy, 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 كيف إرهابي وأنا عايش ببلادي؟ مين إرهابي؟ أنت إرهابي ماكلني وأنا عايش ببلادي قتلني زي ما تلت إجدادي أجل الخنون عالفاضي ما أنت يا عدو بتلعب دور الشاهد المحامي والقاضي علي قاضي نهايتي بادي حلمك انقل فوق معنى آلية حلمك لآلية تصير بالمقابر أكترية ديمقراطية والله انكم ناسية من كثر ما اغتصبتوا النفس العربية حبلة ولدت ولد اسمه عملية انفجارية وهنا ديت يعني ضربتني وبكيت سبعتني واشتكيت لما ذكرتك انك بدين نطيت وحكيت ما انتو بتخلوا ولاد صغار يرموا حجار ما لهمش اهل يدبوهم بالدار ايش كنو نسيت انو استحق ضب الاهل تحت الحجار وقلق لما وجع الفار بتناديني ارهابي مين ارهابي انا ارهابي كيف ارهابي وانا عايش في بلادي مين ارهابي انت ارهابي ماكلني وانا عايش في بلادي ليش ارهابي عشان دمي مش هادي حامي عشان رافع راسي وارض بلادي قتلوا حبايبي انا لحالي اهلي تشردوا راح اضلي انادي انا مش ضد السلام السلام ضدي علي بده يقضي تراثي بده يمحي واللي بيحكي كلمة بشد ورا همة بيكون زلمة تعملوا منه رمة ومين انتو لسه امتى خبرتو اطلعوا قديش قتلتوا قديش شتمتوا امياتنا بيبكوا ابياتنا بيشكوا اراضينا بيخطفوا انا بقولكم مين انتو انتو خبرتو فدلا احنا كبرنا فقر مين كبر فوسع ومين كبر فجحر صار في داعي عملتو منه اجرامي وانت يا ارهابي بتناديني ارهابي مين ارهابي انا ارهابي كيف ارهابي وانا عايش ببلادي مين ارهابي انت ارهابي ماكلني وانا عايش ببلادي انت ببطل ارهابي لما تضربني كف واطي خدي تاني كيف تتوقع مني اشكر الاذاني تعرف ايش انت قولي كيف دخياني راكع ركبي وايدي مربطات عيون بالارض وجثث مزتتات بيوت مهدومة عائلات مشردات اطفال يتيمة حرية بكلبشات انت امر انت قتل احنا بنقبر ما علينا بنصبر وجعنا بنصدر اهم شي انك تحس بامان اتريح وسيب لنا الالام ما هو دمنا دم كلاب حتى لا لما الكلب يموت في الرفق بالحيوان يعني دمنا ارخص من دم الكلاب لا دمي غالي رح ادافع حالي لو تناديني ارهابي مين 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 ارهابي انت ارهابي
That was Linda Tabar interviewing Najat Rahman, Assistant Professor of Comparative Literature at University of Montreal, speaking on culture and resistance in Palestine historically. And it was followed by a song, a rap track by Dam, the Palestinian rap group. The track was called Min al-Irhabi, Who is the Terrorist? This next part of the show is going to examine the emergence of Palestinian hip-hop as a new form of cultural resistance to the ongoing occupation, discrimination, and violation of human rights that Palestinians suffer under Israeli apartheid. Recently, there has been much attention paid to this mechanism of expression and resistance used by the younger generation of Palestinians with the upcoming documentary Slingshot Hip-Hop that looks at the hip-hop scene in Palestine. Hip-hop began in the United States during the 1970s as a way for African-American youth to articulate and express their pain as constantly being discriminated against. The younger generation Palestinian youth have adopted this medium of resistance and integrated it within the earlier forms of Palestinian resistance culture that emerged with poets like Mahmoud Darwish, Tawfiq Zayadeh, and writer Ghassan Kanafani. We are now going to get to an interview with Palestinian rapper Tamer Nafar, done by Vivian and Tanya Tabar. Tamer Nafar is a member of the rap group Dem with his younger brother Suhail Nafar and Mahmoud Jarir. Dam is the first Palestinian rap group and also the most famous. They are known locally and internationally and performed all over Palestine, Europe, and the United States. They have also performed shows with Dead Prez, Immortal Technique, and many other political rappers. Dam is from Lid, a mixed city, in 1948. We listened to the interview.
How did you guys get together and how did you start rapping?
Well, I started alone about in 98. Suhail, since he's my little brother, he used to study camera and stuff, so he took the camera and came with me to the studio, and I just asked him to say a few stuff in the song, and he just liked the microphone, and he became following his big brother. I made six album songs. It was in English because I never heard of Arabic rap before until we created it. It was called Stop Selling Drugs, and we published it only 50 copies only here in the hood. And, you know, it's lit. It's hardly 20,000 Arabic people here, so everybody knows everybody. So I get this telephone from this guy called Mahmoud, and he said that he's writing songs and he want me to sing it. I explained to him that I can't take it because I write my own lyrics. If you want, you can join us. And ever since, there's them.
So why did you pick rap?
What attracted me in hip-hop is I love the music and I love the lyrics, and I felt sympathy with it. When I at the beginning, I didn't like it because all I saw on MTV was bitches, bling bling, Lexuses and necklaces. I just heard the lyrics of It's a White Man's World, and it's Tupac's song from Machiavelli's album. I heard the song from All Eyes on Me, How Many Brothers Failed Victim to the Streets. And, you know, I just felt like he's talking about me and my friends. Since Lid, where we live, have the highest percentage of drug dealing and crime actives in the whole of the Middle East. 90% of my friends neither are killed, shot down by drive-bys, or neither in jail or dealing with drugs and stuff like that. So just, you know, I felt the sympathy, like he's talking about me and my friends.
I want to talk a bit about the connection between, like, hip-hop and resistance, and how that related to you and that inspired you.
I believe that there was so many ways you can handle the struggle. Some people burn tires. And I'm not saying my way is better than other ways. Maybe it is better than other ways, and it's less violence, because whenever it's less violence, then it's better. But, you know, I have things that they don't have. You know, I have the tools to make hip-hop. I can't go and talk to people from who have, you know, a curfew, and they can't go to the studio, and I tell them, go and record a song, for example. So I feel it's a resistance in my way. This is the tools that I have, so I'm using it as my way. There's a lot of people over here that don't know nothing about Palestine. All they know is what they know from TV. You know, the propaganda that the Zionism and the USA is giving us. So I'm like Chuck D said, the CNN of the streets. So my resistance is talking about these problems to make people feel sympathy, not with me. And when I say people, I'm talking about the Palestinians, but to notice their own problems and to notice that they can't solve it. So I think it is part of the resistance.
What kind of political message do you convey or want to convey with your music?
Well, I don't call it political. I don't call it politics. I'm demanding for human rights, like the right of return of everybody to live whenever he used to live. Like, I was born here and I deserve the whole right. This is more human than politic. But unfortunately, now there's a big mix-up between when I say, hey, my grandfather used to live in Ascalon, which nowadays is Ashkelon, and he have a house over there, and he have a house in Yaffa, so I have the right to go and live there, and they won't let me live there. So this is non-human when people deny you to live whatever you want, especially when you were born there. So I take it as a human, but they took it and made it more politic.
Palestinians who remained within their homeland have made a significant contribution to the resistance culture. For instance, the poet Tawfiq Ziad. Can you discuss the impact of Palestinian resistance culture on you?
Definitely I can. Look, everybody, you know, you have a mountain, you have a peak. Everybody reached the peak in different ways. I never gave a damn about Tawfiq Ziad, Allah yarhamu, really. I never gave a damn about Palestinian culture and everything. But I gave a damn about Tupac, the beginning. But then Tupac used to sample people like Malcolm X. let's say, Malcolm X, like Martin Luther King, like Huey, like the Black Panthers, whatever. And I liked the sculpture, and I was, damn, I love the Black Panthers and everything. And you know, when I start talking about it with people who doesn't know nothing about hip-hop, you know, Malcolm X, and he says something like that, and he's like, why go too far? You have to fix the ad. Then I was like, oh, damn, I have it in my own language. Then I opened to fix the ad, and it's more powerful even to me. You know, so it's impacting me. That's why I'm sampling out of Iziad. It's in my language. It's resistance. All over the world you have resistance. But this was Tawfiq Ziyad, Hassan Kanafani, Fadwa Tuqan, even Azmi Bshara, even Mahmoud Darwish, Najil Ali. I can name you a lot of Palestinian artists and leaders at the same time. That's really affecting us today. Nowadays, I can't pass a week without reading something from my culture and learning more and more about me and loving myself, which was... You know, I think before I start talking about, yeah, you Zionists doing this and this and that and that and that, I should respect myself, respect my pains, respect and love my culture before I defend it. So this is what we're doing, what we've done and we are still doing now.
Where do you locate yourself and Dem within the broader forms of Palestinian resistance culture?
As a rapper, I see us as a bridge, nothing more. I mean, not the revolution, but a way to lead you to the revolution, because when I grab the microphone and I talk about Palestine, people will start thinking and they will go to the serious people who's doing and who's leading revolutions and who's telling you to stand up and make the 1 million man march, let's say. So this is the other people. I just influence, but the thing is, those people doesn't have no language with the young, with the youth. I mean, when a politician talks about it, or even when Tawfiq Ziyad talks about it. So, you know, it's reading. You got to read it. Or you got to open the TV and watch the politician talk about it. And young kids doesn't like that. Young kids want to have fun. So our music is fun. So they listen to our music. And it will bring them to people like Tawfiq Ziyad. So for this now, I can't say that we are leading. We are just a way to take... we are like the bus, you know? Maybe we are the drivers in the bus, we are the leaders in this way, but we are not the leaders of any revolution for now. This is why we are deeper than that. What we are doing, except hip-hop, it's not just rapping about it. We organize a lot of demonstrations, we do a lot of activism. We work also. You know, we don't just be flow about it, we do it because we really want to be leaders.
What kind of things do you do apart from rapping in terms of social activism?
Well, we've been in a lot of demonstrations. Once they kicked Sahel's ass in a demonstration, I was thrown in jail for organizing this demonstration in front of the police. But we are planning in the future to do a lot of stuff. I'm fighting with the tools. Even from the minimum, we are making the maximum. But when we have the maximum, come on.
So you've written a song about Palestinian women. Can you tell us a little bit about the song and what were your motivations for writing it?
The message is to fight with our both hands. When somebody's attacking you, you don't fight with one hand, you fight with both hands, right? And I'm not talking in a violent or in a physical way. Take it as a metaphor. You're fighting with what you have. You don't put half of your ammo in the house and go with another half of the ammo, especially when the enemy is so serious and big. We are fighting with one hand because in the second hand, we are too busy choking our sisters. And I'm saying if we are demanding for equality, then I think it should start with our homes. I will say it in Arabic, so the Arab crowds will understand me now. بنفعش نحل مشاكلنا لما أنا بأمن إنه 70% من مشاكل الشعب العربي هم من الشعب العربي. الاحتلال الصهيوني والاحتلال الأمريكاني هم من صح لهم تأثير بس 70% من المشاكل هم منا. فاللي بقوله إنه إحنا لازم نحل مشاكلنا وبعدين نكون جاهزين كجسم صحي بنطلع ونعارك نطلع ونحارب مش وإحنا عيانين. So what I'm saying is before we demand equality, we gotta give it.
I just also want to talk about Minat Habi, that song, Who's the Terrorist. Maybe can you talk about the song and maybe describe the content to us and why is it important to have a song that addresses that?
I wrote the song, really, I think, in 2000, I think, the year of 2000. This was more of the time when we were angry, you know, we were angry and had adrenaline, and it turned out good, but nowadays I understand the song more than I understood it before, actually, though we wrote it, but, you know, we wrote it from anger, but we just kind of found how to translate this anger with the year. Nowadays, when let's say every, you know, whatever we go, when you say the word Palestinian or even say the word Arabic, this reminds people of terror. And of course, I can't blame the people because they open the TV and they see us getting, you know, exploding and, you know, suicide bombing, blah, 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 blah. I can't blame them for them thinking that. So, but I can't blame them for judging us without knowing what's happened before. What was in the mind of this terrorist or whatever you call it before he did that? What makes him do that? I mean, did he just woke up and he said, oh shit, my PlayStation is ruined, I have nothing to do, let's go and do a suicide bombing? It's nothing like that. And this is not a religious part. This is more social problems. This is more the environment. This is more like your problem is not having the PlayStation ready. My problem is I can't go to the kitchen and drink because I have a curfew. This is saying, hey, you have a problem to go to your friend because, I don't know, because there's a traffic jam. Well, I can't go. My friend lives 5 minutes from here, and I can't. And it takes me 7 hours because I got to walk through borders and soldiers, 18-year-old soldiers who doesn't understand nothing in their life. So, of course, they are a bit of a victim when they take them and give them guns and watch the Arabs, the terrorist ones, and they just, you know, molested us. I'll give you a little story on a border, you know, because everybody looks at the border just as a stop point or something like that. I had this friend. I'm not his friend anymore. He's Israeli. He was really good friends with us. And then he went to the army in the age of 18. His name is Yossi. So anyway, he's on the border, and he's watching Arabs. This is his job. So he's watching Palestinians, as he calls it. So anyway, we meet with him after he comes from the army, and we speak to him, blah, 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 and he tells us what does he do over there. He say, let's say somebody come, there's this guy, and he sent it as a funny story, and as a funny story, yeah. There's this 60-year-old old man and his grandson or his son, I don't know, 20 years old, and they were sitting on the border, waiting to get through the border. So Yossi and his friends decided, you know, it will take him 3 hours to walk through the border. So let's have more entertainment, you know, so the time will move fast. So they decided to take this old guy and to ask him to run, just for fun, to run from one point to other point in 30 seconds. If he does it, and this is a true story, I heard it from the soldier itself, to run from one point to other point in 30 seconds. If he does it more than 30 seconds, he will do it again. So the old man run, and he do it in 35 seconds. This is not enough. Yossi tells him to run again. He runs again. Okay, he runs 3-4 times. Then he sit on the floor, and he says, I can't take it anymore. And Yossi is saying to him, he's telling me, Tamer, I swear to God, I asked him politely, please stand up and run. He didn't run, so he broke his leg.
Oh. Yeah.
And what happened, and his word says, his grandson, the 20 years old, grabs us from behind, attacks us from behind. So we taught him a lesson, we broke the shit out of him, and now he's in jail for attacking an Israeli soldier. So, if anybody can go to this young man and tell him not to hate the Israelis, not to hate the occupation, if you have all kind of ways before you talk about, let's all live together, let's not have hate, if you have the ways, then I respect that. If you don't, then shut the fuck up. And don't judge anybody.
You grew up in Lydd, and you often, in your songs, refer to it as a ghetto. Can you tell everybody about Lydd and the social conditions of this city or this town within Israel, within the democratic, so-called democratic state of Israel, and like, what are the discriminations and the differences between Lydd and an Israeli town?
Well, just so people will understand, inside of Israel, after the occupation of 48, they transferred most of the Palestinians from their land. They threw them to Jordan, to Lebanon, to what's coming around, to the lands around. But somehow 300,000 Palestinians got stuck here. Luckily, I say that. Proudly and luckily. Everybody with his own story. Somebody was under something. Somebody just stayed here. I don't know. Anyway, my grandfather was one of them. He was transferred from Yaffa to ask. Then they wanted to throw him to Jordan, and Lydd was just the stop point. They threw him to Jordan. They used to sing to them, Yalla, Yalla ala Abdullah, it means go to Abdullah. And somehow he got still in Lydd. That's why I was born in Lydd. About the 300,000 Palestinians became 1,300,000 Palestinians. And you have only 5 mixed towns, mixed cities inside of Israel, like Haifa, Lydd, But basically, the Jews live alone, and the Arab lives alone. You understand?
Yep.
Now, inside of the mixed cities like Lid, you have three kind of the neighborhoods over here. You have the white neighborhood, which is a good neighborhood only for the Jews. You have a gray neighborhood, which is a mix between the Palestinians and all kind of Jews from the, like the Marrakesh, like the Russian, like the Ethiopian, those who's also been discriminated by the Israeli government, also as they are Jews, but for their color. And you have the Arabic ghettos. They call us cancer, and they need to cut us. Means if they will do the maximum that we won't breed and be more Arabs. And this we see it in daily life, like houses, homes, everybody have homes. Over here in South Israel, Israeli people, who are Arabs and Palestinians, but they live in Israel, they vote, they pay taxes and everything. In Lid alone, they already destroyed about 70 houses. This is an example. I'm talking about drugs inside of the neighborhoods. I'm talking about education. Oh, my God, we are studying about the heroes of Zion and how to love the land, how to understand that this land is only for the Jews. Through the heroes of Zion, through the poems of Zion, we never study nothing about us. Policeman just shot a friend of ours. He's 17 years old. They killed him just because he looks Arabic. So, and you heard about October. They killed and murdered 13 Palestinians who's living inside of Israel.
Thank you so much for...
Well, I have one thing to say, and you gotta put that.
Of course.
This is them. Our album will be out in March. It's called Ihda, means dedication. And buy it. You will have the lyrics translated. And that's it. Hope you'll enjoy the music. It's hip-hop. It's two cultures, hip-hop and Arabic culture, our culture. So hope you enjoy it, because I know you will enjoy it.
All right. Thank you so much.
That was an interview with Palestinian rapper Tamer Nafar. For more information on them, you can check out their website at www.dam3rap.com. That's dam3rap.com. Again, that's dam3rap.com. Also, if you are interested in learning a bit more about the emergence of rap as a new form of cultural resistance in Palestine, you can check out the Slingshot Hip Hop website, where you can watch the trailer of the documentary and get more information about other rappers in Palestine. Their website is www.slingshothiphop.com. Again, that's slingshothiphop.com.
منظرك خبيث بوليس ليش لابس قناع ابليس بوليس قولي مش عارف انك تعيس نفسك نفس رخيص ونفسي نفس نفيس ابو الاميس بتطلع علينا بطريقه غريبه كان عربي من سجن وماكلين تأبيده ولو بدي امشي على القانون زي عربي الساعه عشان عربي بتقولي والطقاع واقف ضعف خفف الاجرام مش تدق بتكيف على كل عربي بنهان بتطنش القانون القتل والاسموم عشان تتاكد انه العربي يكون مهموم ممحول تشوف العربي بيتهزا زهقت الحكومه وزهقتك يا ابو الازرق بنفسي اشوف زيك مش مرشي بشعبي كتير مرفي منك يا شرطي
احنا زهقنا سلعي برفع راسي من تقل ستيجما هزقنا وندبنا خلاص خلاص فينا عيش الوقت انه مفكها مفسر لكل سمانة مين انتو مين احنا زهقنا سلعي برفع راسي من تقل ستيجما هزقنا وندبنا خلاص خلاص فينا عيش الوقت انه مفكها مفسر لكل سمانة مين انتو مين احنا هذا الحكي مش ضد كل شرطي بصدق كل شرطي اعمى زي ستيفي واندر قبل ما يشوفني بكرر اني اجريسيفي وبعنطر اجريسيفي وبعنطر وانا ولا عمري عميلة اشي عاطل بيحكي معاي اكني كنت قاتل اكني كنت سارق اكني كنت حارق وكل اللي انا كنته عربي مارق وفوق اني عربي كمان للداوي يعني اكيد لكستوت بيلعبوا لعب بسيارتي بقص ايدي زلقيت حبة اكمول واللي بقرني اكتر من الهلسات هدول لما يضح انهم غلطانين بيحكوا بتمرضوا بيستلبطوا علي بيتأمر عشان اصحابي حواليهم يضحكوا على العرب نشوفكم اتفلسفوا مع اللداد وبلا طقي وبلا الغرب احنا زهقنا سلعي برفع راسي من تقل ستيجما هزقنا وندبنا خلاص خلاص فينا عيش الوقت انه مفكها مفسر لكل سمعنا مين انتو مين احنا زهقنا سلعي برفع راسي من تقل ستيجما هزقنا وندبنا خلاص خلاص فينا عيش الوقت انه مفكها مفسر لكل سمعنا مين انتو مين من تقل ستيجما هزقنا وندبنا خلاص خلاص فينا عيش الوقت انه مفكها مفسر لكل سمعنا مين انتو مين احنا زهقنا ساعد برفع راسي من تقل ستيجما هزقنا وندبنا خلاص خلاص فينا عيش الوقت انه مفكها مفسر لكل سمعنا مين انتو مين احنا
احنا راسنا دايما لفوق وانتم راسكم واطي يا حساد.
That was the last song in our show this week. It was, again, a track by Dam and Blood, the Palestinian rap group from Lid, and it is called Zhehna, We Are Fed Up. It is part of some of the great work being produced by the new generation of Palestinian rappers. Thank you for being with us. If you'd like to join us, or if you have any questions, please contact us at our email. UOT@ckut.ca. Again, those are the initials of Under the Olive Tree. UOT@ckut.ca. Or give us a call at our landline. Area code 514-398-6788. Again, that's area code 514-398-6788. Thank you very much for listening to us. Until we meet next week under the olive tree, free, free Palestine.